Okay, we've made the turn to this portion of the show, your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. You still live in Memphis, though, don't you, William?
I live in Nashville, that's right.
Oh, Nashville? I thought you lived in Memphis.
Yeah, Guitar Town.
Well, you in Memphis or Nashville?
Nashville.
Oh, okay. But did you ever live in Memphis?
Nope. I've lived in Nashville for 25 years now.
But you were in Memphis during one of our shows or something. I remember you talking about the pyramid down there.
Well, yeah, we talked about that, and we also talked about the Parthenon and Bicentennial Mall here in Nashville, which I call Stargate Park, an incredible place.
Nashville's a great town.
It really is. It's Music City, USA, they call it, Guitar Town. It's full of just, really great vibe, and I love it. People say, why don't you, move out to Los Angeles or do this? It's like, I can walk to the Vanderbilt Divinity Library, which is like my own personal hall of records, I call it. And this type of thing just really keeps me locked into Nashville.
Do you get recognized down there?
No.
They know your name?
They know my name, but I keep kind of a low profile around town.
Well, here we go. Let's take some calls. You ready?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
First-time caller, you're on with William Henry on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Michael from Sacramento.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. I've been listening to you guys for a long, long time. I can't believe I actually got through.
You did this time. There's a reason. Go ahead.
Okay. I've been reading the book by Graham Hancock, The Message of the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask, actually, just two real quick questions, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
First, does William believe that the pyramids and the Sphinx were here in 10,500 B.C.? And if so, it talks about in here the builder gods. Would that be Osiris and Thoth and all that? And if so, do you think that they knew about the coming of Jesus?
All right, both questions. Go ahead, William. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, fantastic question, Michael. Thank you. Yeah, I think that the pyramid and Sphinx were here at least 10,000 years ago, and that whether you want to attach the messianic purpose to the Great Pyramid or not in terms of them having foreknowledge, I don't know. But there's incredible esoteric or parallel alternative Christian tradition that says, hey, Jesus was in Egypt. Mary Magdalene was in Egypt. They spent their time in those temples, including all the initiations in the Great Pyramid, which they call a resurrection machine. And so when you start to add all that up, it starts to say, well, wait a minute, where was that lost tomb that Jesus' body was placed into after the crucifixion? Is it possible, as the Egyptians maintain, that it was the Giza Pyramid? I mean, the first time I went to Egypt, George, four or five times I heard these Egyptians saying, Christianity is the Egyptian religion. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? You're Muslims. What do you mean? And finally, I understood Christianity is the Egyptian religion with a new name attached to it and a new revelation of that original baseline religion. So there's a lot to be said about that connection that Michael raised.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with William Henry. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I'm sorry, George.
That's okay.
This is Sandra Collins from Texas. I wanted to ask, what happened to the many Big Bangs once they've happened? I mean, do they dissipate? Do they turn into another form of energy?
I don't think anybody knows, Sandra. What do you, Bill? Bill, I'm calling you Bill. I like that. Does anybody ever call you Bill?
You know, it's funny, George. Growing up, I was Bill, and everybody called me Mike. And then as an adult, when I started writing, people started calling me William, and then everybody started calling me Michael. So I answered to Bill, Mike, Michael, William, or Michael.
I've never called you Bill, but today I've used that phrase two times. Once when you were on the air and once when I was introducing or promoing you the first hour. Isn't that weird?
That's funny.
Anyway, go ahead. Sandra's question.
Yeah, the answer, as you said, George, nobody knows. I mean, they probably have all kinds of models that they think will tell us what will happen, but until we actually create them, I don't think we're going to know for sure.
Also, Mr. Henry, have you been able to accomplish the light body effect?
Not in this lifetime, no. I'm still working on it, and in fact, those that when I make presentations, I pull some people out of some really interesting places, people that have just tremendous knowledge, and knowledge way beyond me, and I have to admit, and they say, wow, you know, we really appreciate what you're doing. It's likely you have accomplished this before. This is why there's such a familiarity with this to you, and that you have you are able to communicate this so easily and effectively. So
yeah,
I'm still working on it myself, and have established it as my ultimate lifetime goal, of course.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Good morning.
Hi, my name's James. I'm in Tampa.
Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, I was just thinking about maybe this is going to open the Atlas detector. At CERN will produce a revealing event, like enlightened people maybe disappearing, possibly like the Christian rapture. I don't know, just an idea. Let me see what your guest has to say.
Okay.
Boy, we could develop that theme without a doubt. I mean, what we're talking about here, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, this Jewish legend or prophecy of the herald or forerunner of the Christ or Messiah and the revelation of these secrets is all about exactly what he's describing, revealing the secret of ascension or what is termed as rapture or the lifting up of the elect. And there's no question that this, in my opinion, that this plays into that scenario or belief system.
Okay, next up, our next wild card line. Well, they keep rolling in. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Henry. Nice to speak with you and George. Go through Nashville several times a year. Love it.
Great.
Okay, in reference to the particle accelerator, could this theoretically be another Babylon? In other words, are we our own future? George made a reference to the tanks, the airplanes, the helicopters that were depicted 10,000 years ago during the Ramsey era. Well, what if we are our own future and we are going to destroy ourselves and keep having to start over again?
Well, you know, I really appreciate that perspective. I thought I had perhaps, and this was kind of foolish thinking on my part, I thought maybe I was done with Egypt a couple years ago. And then last year, I really got the sense that, wow, I really need to focus on Egypt, especially Abydos. And not long after, I met an Egyptian dentist who said, you know, you were there, and you remember this, and most importantly, you remember what happened, and the gods remember you, and because you are remembering them. And that's why I think it's so important to look at these stories and recognize that we are probably the ones who did this in the ancient past, and we are here once again to make sure we get it right.
There you go. Does that help you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. You are welcome. When you are at your conferences, like what you're going to do in Nashville, mm-hmm. what you did in Los Angeles, what seems to be the number one topic that people ask you about?
What they want to know mostly is, how do I use this information to improve my life? I love studying about UFOs. I love studying about stargates and extraterrestrials. What does it do for me, and how can I make myself a better person with this information? And primarily, my answer is, well, it expands your imagination. And anything that expands your imagination expands the potential for yourself. And it's your belief that you have to come in with, and then choosing new actions that support that belief that will bring about the change in your life and the improvement in your life.
Very good. East of the Rockies, Rob, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, Robbie. Good.
You guys are having a classic show tonight, let me tell you.
I'm having a great time with him. Now I'm in the groove with you, William. Now I'm in the groove.
Yeah, we rock, George.
Yeah, we do.
It is a rocking show tonight, guys.
For a 45-year-old and 57-year-old rocker, right? Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, that's what makes up most of my my peers, that age group, and I'm 28.
That's cool.
So you guys are doing it. Quick question. What passage was that where you were reading from where Elijah blows the trumpet and the light is created?
That comes from Lewis Ginsberg's Legends of the Jews.
Oh, gotcha.
Which is a kind of a classic.
It might have been in the Bible.
Pardon me?
I thought it was in the Bible.
The Bible does speak of the blowing of the trumpet.
It speaks of blowing of many trumpets.
Yeah, which is really kind of the key image, too, because the trumpet is an instrument that produces a sound or a vibration, and that is a key element, many believe, of the 2012 event where this new tone, frequency, vibration will be bathing the planet. But one other thing, in symbolism, the trumpet is the instrument that joins heaven and earth. And a lot of times you'll see, in alchemical imagery especially, you'll see like Jacob asleep on his stone with an angel on the ladder blowing a trumpet into his ear. And so that trumpet then became the instrument that joined his consciousness with the heavenly beings. Well, today, the key image, the ultimate image of an instrument that joins heaven and earth is a wormhole. And the way physicists portray the wormhole, the mouth of those wormholes, they look like trumpets. They look like trumpets. It's incredible the way this imagery is spinning up to a new level now. And I'm thinking that the sound or vibration we're talking about here is ultimately the vibration that opens these wormholes.
Fascinating.
Okay, good. Thank you for the call. Let's go west of the Rockies. Joshua, you're on the air with us. Hi, Josh.
Hey, George. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
That's a great show tonight. I got two questions. One's directed to your guest. With him talking about CERN, I was just curious if you'd heard anything on the John Titor story.
You've heard of the John Titor time traveler story, William, haven't you?
Time traveler, right, yeah, sure. I'm familiar with it. I don't know the details of it, but sure, I've heard of it.
Okay, and the second question was to you, George. With everything that's going on right now in the world and things coming to pass, and especially with CERN going on, what's your thoughts about John Titor now, but since a lot of this stuff has come out?
Well, I got to tell you, more and more, Josh, that I hear about John Titor's predictions, or I should say observations, because he was from the future, they say, he seems to be getting more and more right on. Things seem to be guiding right toward what he's been talking about. It's weird.
Scary.
Yeah, it really is. Do you think, William, that there could be time travel, let's say, 500 years from now?
Hopefully sooner. But, yeah, I think that we're establishing a new reality here, a new day with connections to other dimensions, be they in time or space or nanotechnology. We are clearly broadening our horizons, without a doubt, and I think that time travel will certainly be a part of that.
Future or past? Which way do you think they can go?
Well, I mean, that's one of the big arguments here is this, what they call the time travel, the paradox is what has to be resolved. The biggest problem is, you know, as they say, well, you know, what if someone goes into the past and kills their father and alters that reality? And the way that they've answered that is that, well, perhaps there's a multiverse. Maybe there's many universes out there, and a person could go back in time and, well, let's just say they've murdered their father or killed their father. I don't know why they always use that as the example.
It's a horrible example, but I know it's that.
Yeah, and so maybe what happens is they got away with it because in the universe next door, that father lives and has the son all over again in another life or in another dimension.
That's a good point. Okay, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. Hi there, you're on the air with us.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Henry.
Hello.
I had some questions. I wanted to make some references to Hindu scripture.
Mm.
I'm not completely familiar with it. I, you know, just recently started getting into this kind of thing and different scriptures. But they talk about the chakras and the yugas and these celestial cycles, as they seem to be. I was hoping maybe you could make some connections from these to the 2012 theories and situations.
Well, there's a lot of work being done on that right now. Walter Cruttenden has actually, I think, done the best on it. He had a book called The Lost Star of Myth and Time and really outlined how these cycles play and how we are, in fact, emerging from an era of darkness into an age of light. And so, yet again, there's another tradition that speaks of this transformational age that we're in and the opportunity that we have now to return to a sort of golden age era. In fact, I talked with Walter once about all this and said, well, you know, Walter, there seems to be this push by science and technology to duplicate the abilities of the gods. We're trying to make ourselves bigger, stronger, faster, smarter with technology. And I said, do you think that we can fake the golden age with technology? And he's like, no way, because what the golden age also ultimately represents is the activation of our inner abilities, and at least this idea that we want to be cautious about this technology, because ultimately that is material based. It's not spiritually based, and we have to focus on the spiritually based technology in this time.
All right, very good. Next up, let's go to west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Michael calling from Oceanside, California.
Sure, Michael. Thank you.
And hi, William, Bill, Michael, Mike. I don't know how they got to Michael and Mike from William, but anyway, my question is, I was born in the Azores Islands in the North Atlantic Ocean, and they sit atop the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which I believe is the largest undersea mountain range, where it's an important focal point where the continents broke apart at that very point. And ever since I was a kid, I always sensed that things are really kind of prehistoric there. And I always sensed a magic, and there's something about that area. And I was wondering, since Atlantis had the root word is Atlantic and Atlantis, I was wondering if you had any information or anything you could relate to that?
No, unfortunately not. I haven't been to the Azores. I've heard of that possibility that that's where you want to look for Atlantis. But other than that, no, I haven't looked into it. But I will take your cue and follow up on it, though.
Okay. Well, I did have one other idea, and I was just wondering why these ancient civilizations, why they contacted people so long ago. Was it because they were not a military threat to them in any way? I mean, there hasn't been any contact really in modern times to equate to the contact that these ancient civilizations had with these space travelers or whoever they might have been.
Well, I think twofold answer. Part of it, the contact has been ongoing, but second of all, 10,000 years is literally a blink of an eye from their perspective. So while it appears to be a very long time to us, from the cosmic perspective, it's like the blink of an eye.
I kind of thought that. Okay, well, I thank you very much, gentlemen. Great program.
Okay, you are very welcome. William, we're going to take this little break, then we'll come back with final phone calls, my
friend.
Okay,
great.
And you're Egypt in April, Nashville right after that, right?
Yes.
Okay, my friend.
Actually, Nashville first, then Egypt.
Okay.
And everybody's welcome.
All right, very good. That's one of William Henry's conferences, and you can get that information at williamhenry.net. So when I come right back, we'll take final phone calls for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, tomorrow we've got a night of supernatural ghosts. And if we can knock on wood, we might have some incredible EVP sounds for you, too. Robert Honeycutt will be our guest. He heads up the Georgia Ghost Society, and we'll be back. And welcome back, William Henry, our guest. We'll take your final calls as we roll right along. William, you ready for the last ones?
Absolutely. And thanks again, George, for having me on the show tonight. This
Always
has been really
pleasure.
Wonderful.
When was the last time you were on with me?
Gosh, it's...
With
well,
me. I know you were on with Ian
back in
August of last year.
Seven. So, yeah, so it must have been
way
maybe
that.
Spring of 07.
Yeah, possibly about a year ago.
Yeah.
Way too long. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's Cliff, Carson City,
hey,
Nevada.
Hey, Cliff, sure.
Hey, George, I heard you talking about this Large Hadron Collider, and it was interesting because today I just got my March 2008 copy of the National Geographic, mm-hmm. and I haven't had a chance to read the article yet, but there are some fantastic pictures in this issue of the collider and about a 6 or 7 page article as well. So I just wanted to let your
sure.
Listeners know that.
All right, thanks.
Sure, you're welcome.
Okay, that's it?
That's it.
All right, there you go. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Am I on?
Yes, I think you are.
How's it going, guys?
Good. This is, what's your name?
My name's Corey Caswell.
Okay,
I'm
Corey.
I'm in Surrey, BC, Canada.
All right.
Very close to Vancouver.
Okay, take
Vancouver.
Away.
I got a couple things I just wanted to like make a comment on. First of all, have you ever heard of a guy named John Leonard Walton?
No.
Nope.
Oh. Well, he's an astrophotographer that works in the, well, he lives in the UK, and he's actually got a few websites where he basically displays, he's discovered, like, objects that are orbiting the Earth, like very strange sort of unidentified objects. You never heard of this?
No, but go ahead.
Well, I think it might correlate with that shoot down that the States did. I mean, if you go to his site, I don't know what the names of them are off by hand, but you can search it. He takes photographs of like the shuttle. Like he uses like sophisticated CCD cameras with telescopes. Oh, excuse me. And basically, has taken pictures of the shuttle, taken pictures of the space station, but he's also taken pictures of these other strange craft that look like almost like Star Wars craft. And he's got like all kinds of documented cases of where he's been like photographed and followed by the UK Secret Service, I guess he thinks it is. He actually has video and photographs of them. Like the guy always has cameras on him. He numerous occasions actually caught them spying on him, and they fly like helicopters over his house all the time and basically harass him. And he actually has like seriously taken photographs. They're not, you can't really tell in great detail what the craft are, but he's, you know, somehow by chance, you know, with his hobby, discovered these objects. And I was just wondering, you know, maybe you could have him as a guest if you could get a hold of the guy.
Well, gotta find him. How come we haven't heard of this guy, William?
I don't know. I mean, there's he could be just one of these lone gunmen type that are out there doing this work and waiting for the light to be shown on them.
That could be. Okay, next up, let's go to our next wild card line. Hi, Kathy. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, William.
Hi.
I just wanted to know, are you associated with Noetic Sciences and Carolyn Miss? And also, I'd like to talk about a time warp experience I had.
No, I'm not affiliated with Noetic Sciences. I think they do great work up there and would love to maybe do some presentations there. And no, I don't know Carolyn Mace. I, of course, know who she is, but I don't know her personally.
Yeah. I had this experience, and I realized that I think I went into a parallel universe to the Earth. I went and visited a castle in Germany called the Neuschwanstein in Bavaria. Are you familiar with that castle?
No, I'm not.
It was the castle that Walt Disney based his theme parks on.
Mm.
And there's pictures of this castle. It's, I was visiting it, and the tour guide, we were walking down from the bus to the castle on a trail, and I saw this courtyard in my mind and a little girl warning these men on horses not to go, that he would be dead.
Speak up if you can, Kathy.
And I asked Sylvia Brown in 2000 what happened to me at this castle, because it looked so familiar to me, and I knew exactly where the servants' quarters were, and I knew where the turrets looked familiar, the back door to the kitchen. Things just popped out at me, and so she told me that I was in a time warp. And I started reading the history of the king who lived in the castle, who was Ludwig II, the crazy king. And apparently she told me that he had stabbed me to death, that I was his illegitimate daughter who...
stabbed you to death?
Yeah, I was his illegitimate daughter, and... at the castle, though, when I was visiting the castle, I remember that it didn't look anything. There were certain things about the pictures of the castle, about the chapel and some of the outbuildings that were built in the second and third inception.
William, do you ever come across reincarnation on your work?
I do, yeah, absolutely. And I can really relate to what she's talking about in terms of a time warp. I had a similar experience at Abusir, one of the temple complexes near Giza, the last time I was in Egypt back in January. I was walking along, and suddenly I looked down, and there were two sets of feet. There was my feet, but my feet were inside of what must have been like a size 20 shoe, the foot of a giant, and it froze me in my tracks. I literally screamed, "Whoa!" It was like, okay, I just experienced a time warp kind of experience. And so I know that that happens from personal experience and can fully relate to it. And I'm not saying that that means I was a reincarnated Egyptian giant or something. It could have just simply been metaphoric, and I'm certainly open to that possibility. But what I would suggest to the caller is to definitely follow through with that. Because there's no telling what knowledge she might have about that place and where that could ultimately lead for her.
Okay, let's go next to our wild card line. John, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is John in Riverside, California.
Hey, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple of notes written here. I think that this generator is really dangerous. And first of all, why don't we just wait until we can talk to the aliens and ask if this is a wise thing to do? And, I think that 2012 is about the end of our time here on Earth and possibly at the hand of man. And how dare these people gamble with our world and all of our lives and our time? You know, they'll play with this generator until they generate a dark particle and a black hole. Anything the particle comes in contact with won't be able to be contained, so it eats our world. Did you ever wonder if all of those black holes out there in the universe might have been caused by similar explosions or fools in other worlds that made the ultimate mistake?
They made their own particle accelerator, and it went kooky.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we say that humanity or life has gone on for maybe millions and millions, hundreds of millions of years. You know, I mean, when God wants us back, he'll do it on his own and in his own time and not our time. And, you know, God made this three-dimensional world the way it is and the way we are because that's the way it was supposed to be, and it was good. You know, these guys are just guys in white coats with a license to experiment with our lives.
What do you think of that, William?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very valid concern, pun intended, actually, that maybe at CERN what they are doing is something that's very black, very dangerous. And I always go back to the ancient stories about the scribes and the secret knowledge. He referenced ETs. Why don't we just wait for the ETs to show up and tell us what this is? And the distinction is made in these ancient texts, especially the story of those who acquired this secret knowledge, that knowledge brought down to us by the Watchers or other ET groups is worthless. That humans have to ascend to get true revelation. And in story after story, you have the scribes who mastered the ancient secret lore and were able to ascend to the level of the light beings and then were given this additional knowledge called the Tablets of Destiny or the Secrets of the Gods personally or directly by the light beings. And so, yeah, maybe he's right. This could be technology handed down, as I mentioned earlier, as a sort of Trojan horse kind of scenario that is designed to ultimately destroy our civilization. Personally, I don't think that, but I can see exactly where he's coming from and why he would have that concern.
East of the Rockies. Hi, Greg. You're on the air with us.
Hi. How you guys doing tonight?
Okay.
Hey, I'm a reconnective healing practitioner, and when I was reconnected, I saw light beings, mm-hmm. and the pyramids, and, you know, I was wondering, you know, you have a lapse of time, like you're out of your body where, you know, you're not connected here anymore. Do you know if what you're working on and what Eric Pearl's, the reconnection and all that stuff, there's any ties together because of that?
Or? Yeah, there's hardly a week goes by that someone doesn't email me saying, you and Eric Pearl got to get together. Because you're kind of like bookends. What you're talking about and what Eric Pearl's got with his reconnection, they fit together. And so I'm really excited about that. I didn't get a chance to network with him in Los Angeles. We were both at the Conscious Life Expo, but I've read his book, I've seen his DVDs, and highly, highly admire what he's doing.
I was going to say, when I do reconnections and reconnective healing on people, people talk all the time about seeing the beings of light. You know?
Absolutely. And that's a one way that, you know, these light beings are among us today. There's no question. I mean, all you have to do is go to YouTube and type in light beings, and you'll see 15, 20, 100 different people's videos about light beings and meditations about light beings and healing with light beings. They are here now. There's no question about it.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Okay, let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
This is Rupa in Maui.
Hi, Rupa. Go ahead.
Well, aloha to you, George and Will, and thank you for this lovely evening.
Well, thank you.
I have a question. Will, you mentioned spiritual technology. I'd like to know what that is.
Well, it's spirit-based technology. It's about activating the latent capabilities of our body, which is, I think, the ultimate technology. It's from our soul's perspective, the body is the temple, and it is the ultimate particle accelerator that we use as the ladder, tower, or stairway to heaven.
Wow.
How about that? You're speechless.
I'm speechless. I mean, it resonates like something went zing in my body, but I'm just curious and open to it. And
yeah. Visit my site, williamhenry.net. I've got lots more information in that regard about how we view our body as this ladder or stairway. And once we start to make that mental shift, we do start thinking of our body as, in fact, a spiritual technology. It is the most precious thing that we have, our precious gift, and we need to use it for what it was intended to do.
Well, that's interesting. I'm a massage therapist, and when I'm giving a session, I know that my best sessions is when I'm so conscious that what's happening is light and love between both of us, like I'm giving and receiving at the same time.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you both.
Okay, Rupa. That's a pretty name, different, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Rupa and Maui.
Let's go west of the Rockies, Bob. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hi, William and George. I'm a big fan of both of you guys.
Well, thank you, Rupa.
Here's my take on CERN. I think people on other planets, they'll read about it in the Galactic Times. It's something like on Wednesday, planet Earth and one quarter of the Milky Way galaxy was destroyed when the CERN experiment went wrong, and until the beings from the Andromeda galaxy could come and shut it off. They'll determine that it was due to Professor Schmertz forgetting to carry the 4, and the decimal point ended up being wrong on the gravitational force vector. Last transmission coming from Earth will be the words, uh-oh.
I thought it was the Beatles Across the Universe, yeah. You know, I mean, that's a... I kind of go along with that. I mean, except I would say they're probably debating about intervention right now. I mean, they kind of look at us as sort of like hillbillies out here in the middle of nowhere who are starting to grab this teething ring. I mean, we've been teething on Einstein for 100 years now, and it's led us to the point now where we have created this 17-mile-around ring in Geneva, Switzerland, that can either ultimately be a ring of cosmic sovereignty. In other words, it will provide an open gate to the rest of the universe for us, or it is possible that it will be a ring that will quarantine us for ever. Literally, the ring will turn into the black hole that devours us. And again, this is why public attention needs to be focused on this. And I just kind of stand on the what I said earlier, that the intention of the Atlas experiment at CERN is to map the secrets of the universe, not to destroy the Earth. There are, without question, black operations and black scientists here, or dark scientists here in the U.S., following the Nazi lineage, that would love to weaponize this research and this knowledge that is derived from these experiments. And for all we know, they have already developed such weapons.
Now, William, one more thing for you. As you've probably heard, Shiva, you were talking about before, was king of the yogis.
Mm-hmm.
And in the yoga tradition, and you were also talking of the serpent. The serpent is definitely a symbolic of the kundalini energy.
Without a doubt.
Internal. And then the sap you were talking about, the sap of the universe.
Right.
In yoga, that is called Amrit or Amrita, which is called the nectar of the gods.
Right, the nectar of immortality.
Right, which is all internal. And so all of this light stuff and the light being is as you've, you know, determined. This goes back in the Vedic literature. So like you said, it's all internal technology.
Yeah.
The imagine is imagine in, and the believe, I think, is be and live.
There you go. Love it. I mean, that's what I said when I walked into that giant cathedral there at CERN and saw the Atlas experiment. It's like, wait a minute, that's just a big, giant 10-story pineal gland that they're going to try and produce this sap with. That's we have this technology in our bodies. We need to learn about that. We don't need to build these giant machines out here that cost billions of dollars that put us all in jeopardy. We've got it within us already.
Well, you called me after your Egyptian visit just to give me any updates on anything.
Oh, I would love to, George. Thank you very much. Yes.
And bring a shovel and start looking for the Hall of Records near the base of the Sphinx.
Okay.
And dig. William, thanks again. And again, very briefly, your two DVDs, tell us about them.
The Light Body Effect and Revelation 2012 are packaged. You can get them together that will bring you up to speed on all of this idea about activating this latent potential within your body, stunning visuals that are highly, highly entertaining but incredibly educational to our spirit being. And join me in Nashville. Join me in Egypt. Come to Sacred Scotland with us. This is the summer where the rubber starts hitting the road, and let's get it done.
And join him on his website, which is williamhenry.net. You got it?
That's it.
Thanks, William.
Thank you, George.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with a program on ghosts, so you don't want to miss that at all. Well, here's the team. Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, Art Bell, everybody else back there that keeps us on the air. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.